everybody. Welcome to Theater Schmooze, where we chat with Jewish theater makers from around the world about their art, Judaism, and vision for theater's future. I'm your host, Danielle Lipsky. This podcast is brought to you by the Alliance for Jewish Theater, a nonprofit organization made up of theater artists, theaters, and other people connected to theater to promote the creation, presentation, and preservation of both traditional and non-traditional theatrical endeavors by, for, and about the Jewish experience. Today, we'll be talking with Kendall Pinkney, who is a theater artist, creative producer, and almost rabbi based in Brooklyn, New York. It's such an honor to have you as a guest on our show, Kendall.
It's so great to be here with you. Thanks for having me.
Of course. You wear so many hats. I can't wait to talk about all of them.
Yeah, hopefully we can cover at least a couple of them. Looking forward.
Yeah. I think we definitely can. And I have a great place for us to start. And that is with talking about LABA, a laboratory for Jewish artists who come together and study Jewish texts around a theme for a year. So when you were there, you said that you studied the theme of physical beauty, looked at rabbinic and biblical texts on it, and then created works of art based on those themes. I'm curious, how did being part of this laboratory serve all the parts of your career and life, particularly in how you were able to merge, reflect, and share in your multiple identities and roles?
LABA's had a really huge impact on my career. I mean, it was now, goodness gracious, upwards of 6-7 years ago, I think, that I was part of the fellowship. And I would say that I was always looking for a way to bring my identity as an artist into conversation with my identity as a Black Jewish individual. And there aren't many places where you can bring all of these different parts of yourself together, or at least not in an easy exploratory way. I think that LABA was a fantastic space in which to experiment. It's really about incubation and trying something out and a bit less focused on what is the final product. So I was really grateful to have that full year of study with the amazing Ruby Namdar, who's a fantastic teacher of classical Jewish texts and also happens to be an award-winning fiction writer. And the rest of my cohort, I mean, everyone was just really wonderful and really encouraging. And we got into some really fantastic conversations around these texts and stories of our heritage. I would say that with what we studied that year of physical beauty, while I'm not exactly sure how it contributed to, my career as it's kind of unfolding in this moment, what I can say about it is being in a group of artists who are working with Jewish texts around certain themes and seeing how can you make something that feels really craft worthy and art forward. It's really enticing. It's really liberating. It definitely guides me in kind of my artistic direction with some of the stuff I work on now. And it also let me actually create the beginnings of a musical that's actually based on my experience of converting to Judaism, placed in conversation with the Book of Ruth, where Ruth is arguably the most famous convert in the Jewish tradition. So that piece called Bread of Heaven started at LABA and really benefited from being in that community.
Wow, that's incredible. Where are you at now with that project?
So probably because LABA made learning classical Jewish texts so fun, I think within a year or two after that, I applied to rabbinical school, which has kept me busy for these last 4.5 years. So I am still practically at the same place as when I left off. So there's about 20 minutes of it that is written and it's been performed in kind of a light production kind of way, also at the 14th Street Y, which is where LABA is housed. That being said, in the process of writing the piece with my collaborators, since I thought that I was on the way to rabbinical school, I said, wouldn't it be interesting if I'm writing this before rabbinical school, what if I finish it after rabbinical school? Because inevitably I'm going to have a different approach to my story and my memories and also what I think about being a rabbi, being Jewish in Judaism. And now that I'm about 3 years from being done with rabbinical school, that holds true. Even though, yes, I'm the same person, my views have changed dramatically over the 6-7 years. And so has life and my career.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. That's incredible. I can imagine that your experiences in rabbinical school are really going to inform the way that you tell this story. Ah, that's so cool. And the way that you approach your theater career in general. I'm curious, you touched about it a little bit in your answer to the previous question, but you're a person of many different identities, as you said. You are Black, you are Jewish, you are in rabbinical school, you're a theater artist, a producer, a convert, all these different identities and background markers. I'm wondering how that has shifted your perceptions or given you certain realizations in the theater world.
Mm. Yeah, that's a really fascinating, unique question. One thing that I frequently say whenever people kind of give me the space to have a longer chat with them is I often say I wish that I could give everyone a conversion experience, like what it means to grow up one way, viewing the world in a very specific way, and then to switch your point of view and see the world in a completely different way and have to use different conceptual language, understand it. So when I think about being a theater artist and I think about all of these identities, I actually feel a sense of gratitude that I have all of these different identities that I've spent so much time really trying to understand. Like I've spent a lot of time trying to understand, okay, yeah, I know what it's like to be Black, but like, what is Blackness? I understand what it means to be a Jew, but what does it actually mean to be Jewish? What does it mean to be a cis male? What does it mean to be an American, to be from the South? Like, I've taken quite a bit of time to think about and try to explore within these identities to see the ways in which they map well onto each other and then the ways in which they do not. And I think that's really useful in the theater because theater is all about telling stories where you have to have some kind of central conflict. I mean, if you don't, then it's probably not going to be very interesting theater to watch unless it's something very experimental and kind of like high concept, in which case maybe it does work. But yeah, all of these identities and the fact that I've now spent 35 years trying to parse them and recombine them, reconstruct, deconstruct them, makes it to where my approach to theater is very, I guess, is very much based on that very process. Constantly questioning, reconstructing, deconstructing, trying to figure out what's the through line, what's the arc, does it need to have an arc, et cetera.
Yeah, that makes a lot of sense. It's also a fantastic approach to the many facets and approaches that we have to take to the theater world now, with all the changes over the past several years to the pandemic, the way we've communicated, the way that we've imagined what a theater production looks like, the way we've articulated and challenged whose stories we're telling, whose stories we're not telling. It's really wonderful and unique to have that perspective on your side. I'm curious.
Absolutely.
Yeah. Yes. I'm curious, how about the religious world? How does this translate to rabbinical school and your rabbinic studies?
That's a harder thing to answer. So I'll start by, I guess, addressing the practical. For me, what it's led to is somewhere around my third year of rabbinical school, I just kind of had this realization of like, I already knew that I didn't want to be in a pulpit. Like, I just knew going in that for all that is wonderful about synagogues, synagogue is not my favorite place to be. And so I was like, I know I won't be in a synagogue. And I love working with teens and like college students, but I also figured out fairly early on that Hillel work didn't quite fit as well as some of the other different organizations as well. And so around my third year or so, I was like, you know what? I keep finding myself drawn back to theater, drawn back to creating, drawn to producing, which is a relatively new experience for me. And I think I need to find some way to incorporate this into my rabbinical school career. And so, yeah, around third year, fourth year, I started just leaning much more into my artistic identity, bringing it into fellowships I was doing, mentorships, internships, everything that I could do in order to access that part of me, I did. And then I also started organizing other artists who happened to be Jewish or happened to be Jews of color and collaborating with them on different pieces. I mean, many of whom I happen to know from grad school. So I would say that that's kind of how the theater pieces come into my rabbit now. I very much have sought to create this little niche where there are definitely people who are doing versions of what I want to do, but no one who's doing it quite in the way that I want. But to speak kind of to less to the practical and more to the, you know, kind of the deeper question behind your question, it is really hard to bring in different ways of approaching and seeing the world into legacy institutions. So I attend the Jewish Theological Seminary, which is affiliated with the conservative movement. It is the landmark institution seminary of the conservative movement. And even though I've actually found my teachers and my colleagues at rabbinical school to be wonderfully thoughtful, interesting, and creative individuals, the way in which I've often seen that applied, the creativity, is very different from the way in which I approach my creativity. And so I guess to give a somewhat concrete example, we have this thing called senior sermon that every rabbinical student does in their final year, where you get it to give like a 15 to 20 minute sermon in front of the entire school. I have seen some amazing sermons, some very creative sermons, including one sermon a couple of years ago that was a theatrical sermon, which was great. So it just so happens that person, Rabbi Bronwyn Mullen, is a theater maker and is a fantastic experimental theater maker at that, and a rabbi. So I saw that and I was like, okay, well, I don't want to do what, you know, Bronwyn does. I definitely want to do something that's more in that creative vein. So when I give my senior sermon later this year, I will be reaching out to all of my creative collaborators to see how can we get outside of this form of me standing in front of a room full of people and talking for 15 and 20 minutes and bringing like some really good, you know, quote unquote Torah, but ultimately just standing and talking. So I'm less interested in that. And I'm much more interested in some kind of theatrical, experimental, personal take on giving a sermon. So generally speaking, I don't give sermons, and generally speaking, I don't like giving sermons. So when I do give a sermon, I want to try to make it feel like it is aligned with that theater maker part of myself. I'm sure whatever it'll be, it'll very much be a work in progress, but who knows, maybe it'll end up even being somehow related to, you know, Bread of Heaven play that I need to get back to. So we'll see.
Very cool. Yeah, I'm sure it will definitely inform that experience in the writing of that project. So interesting. Wow. That almost perfectly launches me into my next question. You mentioned being involved in and working a lot with your theatrical collaborators to include more perspectives in your rabbinic studies for your end of year sermon. That's a possibility for you too. I wanted to talk a little bit about the workshop with you. So you're the founding artistic director of the workshop, which is a newly launched arts and culture fellowship for professional Jews of color, indigenous Jews, Sephardi, and Mizrahi artists. I also found that you lead a monthly Jewish text study where each of the workshop artists are paired with a mentor through Reboot, a Jewish arts and culture organization with a network of leading industry professionals in theater, television, film, dance, music, visual arts, and so on. And you also serve as co-director for Exploring Black Narratives, an immersive education program that foregrounds plays by acclaimed Black writers. As a thought and organizational leader for so many wonderful initiatives, I'm curious to know how you've taken all of your own experiences, studies, ideas to inform the creation of these projects.
Yeah. Well, I mean, thankfully with all of these projects, I mean, I'm not doing it alone. And in certain cases, I'm not even like the founder. So for the workshop, yes, it's North America's first Arts and Culture Fellowship for, you know, the artists of those backgrounds that you named. And so that, yes, founded that. And I created that very much based upon my experiences in different arts and culture fellowships, Jewish arts and culture fellowships, and Jewish fellowships, thinking about, oh, what did I like from certain fellowships? And what were the things that really didn't serve the fellows? So in creating that, the thing that I really put at the forefront of this process, we have 7 amazing inaugural fellows for this first cohort, is if it doesn't serve the fellows, then the program has failed. They are my greatest focus and my greatest concern, and I will go to bat for them on just about anything, and I'm here to ensure that they have a good process. So why do I name that? What does that mean? Well, for me, what it means is in starting this organization, we actually started with 4 core partners. And these core partners are JTS, Reboot, the Arts and Culture Fellowship you, or the Arts and Culture organization you mentioned, USDAN Summer Arts Camp, and JCC Harlem. Now, why create a program and start with 4 core partners? Well, one of the things that I had seen happen all too frequently, especially in Jewish spaces, but now especially as I look out on the world of theater, it's happening in the theater world as well, is you will get predominantly white institutions that might start a fellowship for BIPOC artists and do this thing where they kind of, you know, do a press release and they're like, yay, look at us, didn't we do good? And it's like, okay, good, glad you did that program. And what's the next step? How do you make sure that all of these artists go from strength to strength and have as many opportunities as possible to continue moving forward? It shouldn't just be, you shouldn't just plan for a year. You need to set people up to move forward. So in crafting the workshop, I was like, okay, what we need to do is we need to build an ecosystem, an infrastructure that allows for these artists to not only be able to study together and have workspace and perform, but also to have access to residencies, to have access to mentors. And that's where Reboot comes in. So in that case, because I'm a member of Reboot, which is an arts and culture nonprofit that reimagines and reinforces Jewish thought and traditions, I was able to speak to the leadership of Reboot and pitch them on this idea of, hey, what Reboot can offer, uniquely offer, is access to wonderful mentors who are going to be interested in our artists and will be able to not only give, you know, career advice, but hopefully will really be deeply interested in them as human beings as well. And that kind of connection is a very subtle act of allyship and justice, especially since many of the mentors are not Jews of color. So that's kind of how the workshop and its methodology formulated and how Reboot is connected to it. So when it comes to exploring Black narratives, that's a whole other thing. So Exploring Black Narratives is an organization that was co-founded. In fact, I would even say the initial impetus was the founder and my coworker, Lonnie Firestone, who's a theater writer, dramaturg, who's written for any number of publications. And when she came up with this idea, I was like, dang, that's a good idea. I wish I had had that on my own. But hey, let's work together and see what we can do. So what we do is we take the works of contemporary acclaimed Black playwrights into Jewish day schools, working with kids between middle school and high school in order to expose them to these plays, give them historical context, help them think through these themes that they and their families have maybe never thought through before. And then because we're theater professionals, we happen to have a lot of different connections with people who have been in these shows, people who have directed these shows. A couple of the shows that we work with quite a lot are Dominique Marisseau's Pipeline, Schoolgirls, the African Mean Girls, played by Jocelyn Bio. So those are like 2 of our central texts that actually go over really well inside of school environments. And so we are able to bring actors who have been in these shows to actually do interviews with the students. And it just really deepens the education in a different way. And the last thing I'll say on that is, this is actually, it actually does something very, very different than just simply the studying of kind of maybe some of the more standard expected plays by wonderful Black writers, such as like, you know, A Raisin in the Sun, or anything by August Wilson for that matter. So mm-hmm. by having contemporary playwrights who are thinking about, contemporary Black playwrights who are thinking about what's happening in the world mm-hmm. and writing about them in compelling, nuanced ways, by bringing students at Jewish state schools to these new works and turning them into fans of the work, it starts to also change narratives around communities and change narratives around, oh, are these stories not my stories? Oh, yes, they are my stories. I can relate to this. And so there's nothing that warms my heart more than knowing that when we did a recent presentation with a school in LA on Dominic Brissot's Pipeline, the students actually, like at least five students, like, you know, bugged their parents to go take them to see Dominic's show that was nearby.
Wow.
And so that, and they got their playbills signed by the actors and things like that. Like, it's a small act, but those are exactly the small acts that we need to start taking in more serious ways mm-hmm. in education curricula in order to start bringing about this greater change. Because, I mean, I wish that DEI programs with consultants were super successful at changing a lot of the narratives and talk around matters of race and equity. The simple fact of the matter is, once it becomes corporatized, it rarely works in the way that we want it to, and often it doesn't touch us in our hearts. And so we think that by working with stories, that's one of the best ways to do it.
Yeah, it certainly keeps it personal.
Exactly.
And relates it to the everyday that we can relate to. That's beautiful. Wow. I see how these two initiatives are really different, but I also see a lot of crossover between them. How you are serving and providing really valuable information and learning to communities to expand their network of resources, whether it be more exposure to prominent and contemporary Black writers, or to having more reach and context for getting artistic work developed, to having connections in the theater and film and television industry, to understanding how this whole thing works. That's really, really wonderful. In the interest of talking about the current and the types of resources you are providing and creating opportunities for, I'm curious how these programs and the other efforts you're involved in, how have they changed and adapted and adjusted throughout the pandemic? How have you been able to keep up that collaboration and mentorship and information and resource sharing?
I would actually say, in a weird way, the pandemic, for all that is really not great about being in a pandemic, it's also provided us with some unique opportunities. I mean, the workshop launched during the pandemic.
Wow.
So did Exploring Black Narratives. I had been involved with Reboot as a member for a couple of years, so preceding the pandemic. But I think one of the things that came to me was, okay, we live in such precarious times. You don't know what's going to happen next week, much less tomorrow or a year from now. So start trying to find ways to creatively and smartly do more of the thing that you want to do. And so for me, it was like, okay, I know that I want to be doing more work with my collaborators who happen to be Jews of color or are Sephardi and Mizrahi. So I reach out to my friends and we start writing more. And then we start connecting some dots, and then we start doing some small presentations. And then lo and behold, several months later, here we are with the workshop being fully funded, no less, which is really incredible for something that just opened during the pandemic.
Mm-hmm.
So in terms of adaptation, it's been like this, these projects were born largely out of, you know, needing to adapt. And the real question for us is, okay, as we start to move towards a place of things being more stable, and we at least will have more ideas for how we kind of approach you know, the next variant or something like that. Like, how do we move forward and also move forward into the real world with stuff? And that's something that we're going to have to figure out. But yeah, as it stands right now, a lot of our stuff can be done virtually if need be, though we like to do it in person. And I think the biggest challenges will be, so we have a couple of, for the workshop, we have a couple of salons that are going to be live, the live showing of works in progress later this year. So how can we account for what might happen with the pandemic and just be able to still put on something that's interesting and really worthwhile? Yeah, a lot of creative possibilities have, you know, been realized for us.
That's incredible. Oh my gosh. I see that, and I see how wonderful you and your collaborators have been in adapting and shifting and adjusting and seeing what can we do here. You know, there's still plenty of opportunity to create and to serve and to reach out to other people. We may not be able always together in person, but there is so much we can do.
100%.
Yeah. Thank you so much for joining us today, Kendall. This was wonderful.
Absolutely. Yeah, it was my pleasure. And thank you so much for the thoughtful questions. I really appreciate it.
Oh, thanks. And thank you, listeners, for tuning in to Theater Schmooze. A special thanks to Danny Debner, our technical producer, Ilya Levinson and Alex Kaufman, the composers of our theme music, Michelle Shapiro, the creator of our logo, and the entire Alliance for Jewish Theater community. This podcast was brought to you by the Alliance for Jewish Theater. If you like what you've heard today, support this podcast and all of our initiatives towards connecting Jewish theater makers by making a tax-deductible donation to Alliance for Jewish Theater at alljewishtheater.org or joining as a member. Make sure to give us a review on iTunes and learn more about us at our website, alljewishtheater.org. I'm your host, Danielle Levski, and I'll chat with you next time. L'chaim.